Live from the Great American Beer Festival and sponsored by Yard House Restaurants, this is the GABF Beer and Food Pavilion. Give it up, everybody. My name is Andy Sparhawk, and on behalf of craftbeer.com and the Brewers Association, I'd like to welcome you to this little slice of heaven crammed within beer paradise. Little note of service, obviously you guys have food in front of you. Please wait for our seminar leaders to tell you when to eat and drink the beer so we're all on the same page and we don't get confused. Also want to let you know that these are being recorded and will be available on craftbeer.com just as soon as I get back in the office, but I'm taking a break after this. So without further ado, I want to let you know that this seminar is called Beer and Food at Home. Introduce our seminar guest today. You may know him as the beer evangelist. This is Fred Boltman from New Holland Brewing Company, Holland, Michigan. And Ginger Johnson, founder of Women Enjoying Beer. Give it up for both of them.
Thanks, Andy. It is truly a pleasure to have you. Even if you're just here to sit down and take a load off, you're going to get some great ideas and some great flavors in your mouth. So with no further ado, Fred, let's go.
Yeah. So we are really excited to talk to you today from the perspective of taking this whole idea of pairing and taking it home.
Yes.
Because I've done hundreds of beer dinners, I think, in fancy restaurants with...
It's bordering on thousands, isn't it?
Probably. With talented chefs, but... The idea of pairing, of combining flavors together, and of enhancing our experience with beer or enhancing our experience with food
right. Is
really something that I think is more of an everyday
Absolutely.
Process.
Yeah, and Fred and I actually first met at Savor. Has anybody here been to Savor in D.C. or New York? It's an incredible experience of thinking about beer and food in a whole different way. And Fred and I both just love to cook. We think about cooking differently, which we'll talk about. And he's got some great recipes. He's got his fabulous book here, too, by the way. If you don't have a copy, that's something you want to consider. And we're not here to be shameless, but we're going to be. So, yes.
I'm here to be shameless.
All right, let's be shameless. Is everybody ready to be shameless? Yes, absolutely. We're going to drop a disco ball here later. That's right, exactly. All right. So, let's talk about beer and food at home.
Yeah, well, one thing I think we'll do is give you an overview of what we're going to do tonight. Because you have a plate of food in front of you. You're going to get beers brought to you, so I want you to understand why
What's
it's important
going on,
to wait.
Right.
So we're going to take you through three different pairings, kind of with the idea of an appetizer, what could be an entree, and then dessert.
Yes.
And then a bonus.
Yes, we got a bonus today from Cypress Grove Chev. That lovely cheese on there is Truffle Tremor, and we got it because we both really like Cypress Grove. It's a cheese, it's a creamery in California. And it has mushrooms in it. And so that gives a completely different palate experience. And we both encourage you, this is experimentation. Everybody raise your right hand right now and repeat after me. I promise to experiment.
To experiment.
With beer and food. All right, you're halfway there.
I like that pledge. I thought I was back in college there for a minute. So if you're patient and wait with us, we'll walk you through each pairing as soon as we kind of see everybody's got their beer and food.
Yes.
And then we're going to talk you through a few ideas about how hosting relates to this whole thing.
Yes.
Because to me, one of the dangers, let's say, as beer gets more complex and as beer and food become more commonplace, is that we portray it as so complex it's complicated.
Right, and it's not.
And I think one of the ways to think about this is simply, how do you like to host? One of the reasons I love to cook, one of the most important reasons I love to cook is because I like to share food and flavor with people that
yes.
I love.
And why is that? Is it the camaraderie? Is it bringing people together? It's nutrition, it's community, all those things?
Yeah, and I think it was born out of my instinct to just want to have people over and
Very
party.
Good. Yeah, absolutely.
And in fact, there's a story that I tell in the book, which is sophomore year in college, I had my first apartment.
Yep.
And I invited some lovely friends of mine over to dinner. And it wasn't until they agreed and rescheduled it that it dawned on me I didn't know how to cook.
So who'd you call, Fred?
That was the point that I realized if I didn't know how to cook, I really didn't know how to entertain. That hosting was going to have a block.
Those are intrinsically entwined to you.
Yeah, and I think beer is the same sort of thing. I love to offer beers to people I care about. And then the idea of pairing is really just making it even that much better.
Right.
I talk about the fact that pairing is not eating something good next to drinking something good. It's bringing them together with the expectation of change.
I like that.
It's the ultimate gift.
Right. Because when you think about beer and food together, when you drink the beer, you have one experience. When you have the food, you have another, right? Look at her. I got her right when she took a bite. She's happy. And then when you put the two together, you have a whole new batch of sensations and experience and everything going along, and you've got this fabulous marriage.
So does everybody have your first beer? All right. So that is Pale Lusa. It's a pale ale made by my brewery, New Holland Brewing Company. Okay. It's made with 100% Michigan-grown hops, Cascade. And it's a nice, easy-going pale ale with fresh hop flavor. And that is paired with a blue cheese croquette. So the fried croquette there. And I like blue cheese with hops and with bitterness and aromatics and herbal character. I can take them other directions as well.
Right.
They're great with stouts. It's one of beer's wheelhouses.
Right.
But in this case, with a croquette, which has some potato and some flour and some other stuff, it's going to be a little more muted presence. And it's going to be a little softer. Yes, Ginger.
What is a croquette?
I thought you were waving to one of your fans.
What is a croquette?
Well, it's a fried...
piece of yummy?
Yes. Exactly. It's French for fried yumminess.
So that's the...
with cheese in the center.
That's the little...
It looks like it's
coated. There we go. Excellent.
Yeah, and so the blue cheese is going to integrate there and be a little bit subtler. And so there's some sweetness and some breadiness and toastedness that I think will bring the malt to the pale ale forward. And the hops will be a nice... contrast
right.
to the blue cheese.
Right, and let's talk about that for a minute. Go ahead and take a bite, of course. When a lot of times, has anybody been to a food and beer pairing before? Okay, excellent. There's some different words that are commonly used. You know, one is contrast, one is complement. Have you heard some of those used in this scenario? And that's great. We go back to the experimentation, though. One thing that I think is really remarkable about Fred is when he was on my beer radio program, I don't know, I think it was last year, something like that, he was talking about how he has a flavor memory. Smell is one of our most powerful sensory recollections. So if you smell something, right, you think about one of your favorite smells. A lot of people like baking bread or fresh cut grass or, this sounds kind of weird, but I love the smell of my dogs because I love them. So those kinds of things, yeah, that's not real culinary, you know, but they're clean. But we think about that. And we tie those things to mean different things. So, you know, if Fred and I are out somewhere having a barbecue and we smell the campfire and it's just really great, simple food, that memory gets in there. And I think that we both want to encourage you to just have fun with it and try to go by some of your sensory, because your brain is way smarter than we give it credit for. And it's going to remember some of those things together.
Well, and how it relates to pairing is that I don't think it's ever an A-B match game of rules. And that what I like to do is if I'm presented with a food that I'm going to eat and I want to imagine the flavors that I expect before eating it and think about beer flavors that I can imagine and what I'd like to go with it. Meaning it's much more of a personal experience than a complicated set of rules.
Yeah, keep it simple.
There are guidelines and tips that will help you create more positive experiences.
Right.
But then you can riff on those just by remembering them. And for instance, this is partly about memory because typically I'll do blue cheese with a more intensely hoppy beer. I'll go with an IPA, a robust one, lots of floral or aromatics. But here I imagined the subtlety that would take place, and I still used the same bridge, but I went to a more subtle beer.
Right.
So I matched intensity with the same characteristics of hops and blue cheese that I would normally do.
Right, and which beer are we using for
that one? This is Pale Lusa.
And tell us about Pale Lusa a little bit.
Well, it's a simple pale ale with Cascade hops, all grown in the Leelanau Peninsula of Michigan.
All right, excellent. So that's going to be a fabulous beer for a lot of things, right?
Yep, and I think one of the aspects of talking about hosting at home is that, you know, I have some ideas about the habits of a good host. And so I think there's some simple things you can do, which is one, work with what you have.
Yes.
So if you're an advanced chef, then by all means, knock it out of the park.
Right.
If you're not that comfortable in the kitchen and you want to do a pairing event and you want to have people over, think about simple things that you can do in advance.
Right.
And serve while you're relaxed also.
Right. Like, give us a couple examples. What
are
some things
you'll
prepare?
Well, this would be an example. Even this plate is something that Ginger and I had to think about. Well, what can we serve while we're standing up here talking and doesn't require a lot of gymnastics? And so this croquette is an example, something that could be made ahead, set on a platter. You can greet your guests, have a couple of different hop-forward beers out, and just let them dabble.
Right. You know, another thing about the whole entertaining at home, I know I do a lot of entertaining just like Fred does, and we do a ton. So first of all, I invite you all, when you're in Southern Oregon where I live, give me a shout, come on over, and I mean it. But people get really wrapped up in the idea of entertaining just like cooking, and they think that the house has to be clean, they think that they have to do something fancy. You know what? People come together. It doesn't matter if you're going to serve beans and weenies or croquettes. It's about community. And so take a few breaths and relax, because that's going to make you a better cook, and it's going to make your guests a lot more relaxed. This sounds like a no-brainer, but who cares? Just have fun and bring your friends over. They want to be invited.
And this is a very important point, not only about entertaining, but about pairing, which is that, you know, I've learned over the years to really remind myself and the whole context and build everything around the idea that it's not about me. So if you're having people over, you're there to show them a good time. If I'm doing pairings for somebody, I'm not trying to demonstrate a technique or prove anything.
Right.
I'm trying to put something together that's going to be really enjoyable.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
And
it's
so
simple.
When it comes to you sharing this with your friends and family, whatever can set you at ease and whatever can allow you some freedom to connect.
Right. Another thing
is going to make it all better.
Right. And another thing we were talking about before, don't get too wound up in going with what you think are the right pairings. These beers, for example, from New Holland, are extremely flexible. The Paleuza, what a great idea. Have a multitude of beer, as Fred says. Have a bunch in your fridge or throw a beer potluck and just have a great time. Isn't that a good idea, right? Have you ever had a beer potluck? All right, excellent. See this man if
beer
you need instruction.
Potluck.
Beer potluck. Isn't that a good idea?
Yeah.
I like that, because have everybody, you can make it wide open, or you can ask people, well, everybody bring a pale ale or everybody bring a X or whatever, and just have fun kind of mixing and matching. Everybody's taste buds are different, and everybody's opinion is valid. That, to me, is part of the fun. It's just like with Fred is also a beer judge. To do that's a lot harder. We don't have to do that at home. We just want to judge and have a good time with what we're doing.
I also think that the best thing you can do is I always remind people that you have a tongue, so you have a palate, and you have a palate memory. Whether you've enabled that and empowered it and are really listening to it, is what you can change to be develop to be better at pairing.
Right.
And so, you know, listening to yourself and engaging with these flavors is part of a theory I call flavor first, which is that our palate does not care how hard the technique was. Our palate doesn't care how rare the beer was.
Right.
Our palate is just going to log the memory and tell our brain, yes, more please, or, you know, maybe not.
I love it when stuff tastes like
and
more.
And so, I really think this entertaining is a great way to talk about it, but I think it even goes broader than that, which is reminding ourselves, I've changed how I teach people about beer, and that I want you to learn about the grassiness and the floral character and the citrus that can be in a hop-forward beer before I want you to know about all the different types of hoppy beer.
But leave the technical alone for the time being, because people can't taste technical.
And then you think about the flavors in other beers like caramel, nuts, roastiness, chocolate, coffee, and then you learn later that those are malt-forward beers, and you learned what styles you can find them in, because we could walk around this room and I could find 100 pale ales that would go nicely with this croquette.
Absolutely.
It's not a rule about this one. It's about I would taste them and think about what does this taste like, and do I have the right intensity, and does this, when I remember the croquette, does this seem like it would go with it?
Right.
And then if I'd make my decision and bring the beers back.
Exactly. Right on.
And we'd all have a beer potluck.
Yes. I'm coming over to your house for a beer potluck.
All right.
I want to go horseback riding, though, too.
So do you want to talk about cooking with beer?
We do want to talk about cooking with beer. So when we look at beer as an ingredient, I wouldn't say reduce it, because that would insult it, but when we think of beer as a simple ingredient, first of all, how many do you like to cook? Okay, great. So, yes. Ooh, all right. Latecomer, but nonetheless enthusiastic. liking to cook and just having the spirit of experimenting is the most important thing. If you burn something once in a while, who cares? It's food, put it in the compost and start over. So cooking, just the act of it, and thinking of beer as an ingredient. Here's a couple of tips. Fred's chopping some garlic for the peanut sauce coming up in a little bit. A couple of the tips that I like to share about cooking with beer is invariably you're going to have some beer left over. I know it's rare for some of us, but sometimes it's there. Maybe it's something you just don't want to finish. Maybe it's a high alcohol content and you don't need all of that. Someone who brings something over and you're just not real keen on it. It doesn't mean it's bad beer, for one. It means you simply don't care for the flavor. Throw it in your ice cube tray. Put it in your ice cube tray, freeze it in ice cubes. You've got little serving pieces, and that flavor is still there. So the carbonation goes, but that's less important. I love to use Hefeweizen in muffins. I like to use porter in gravies. I like to crock pot a lot of different things. And you don't have to cook with every dish doesn't need beer in it, but it's an amazing component if you can think of it as an ingredient.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
So do you want to start building this while I talk a little bit about my other thoughts, and then I'll talk you through this recipe. So we're going to make a peanut sauce. We're going to demonstrate that beer people are risk takers, because we're going to make a peanut sauce with egg beaters. So we're going to need your energy. You're going to need to cheer us on. Can we do it? We can do it. I feel like I need this in triumph. I need to raise my egg beater. So cooking with beer, I have a few thoughts. One, you don't have to do it. A beer dinner, a pairing, your experience will be lovely whether you cook with beer or not. But then when you do start cooking with beer, you need to look at it as an ingredient instead of a requirement. So you need to ask yourself, what will it lend to this? I look at it in that way, and I use my flavor memory, and I think, well, what are the flavors here that might enhance this dish? And then I think about, how am I going to do it? A couple of thoughts. You can use beer raw. And when I say raw, it's when it's not going to be directly on heat. So it's a little bit of a variation, but I consider brines raw. So if you're going to make a salt brine and you want to cut your cooking liquid or your brining liquid in half with beer to get some of those aromatics or flavors, you're not cooking that beer. You're storing, you're conditioning the meat or protein in that brine. That's going to mean that the beer is not losing its balance. When you put beer on a saute pan, you're going to start evaporating liquids. And so that balance between bitterness and sweet that was well composed when it went into the pan is going to start to change and may not be as composed and could really turn bitter. So raw is another example of this peanut sauce. So really what we did is took a variation of a few traditional peanut sauces and replaced the chicken stock with beer. Why? Because I learned that I really love this spiced pumpkin ale with peanut sauce. And the beer has cinnamon and nutmeg and allspice, things that would make a peanut sauce a little livelier and also provide a bridge and just enhance that bridge a little more.
So when you're thinking about the ingredients, and by the way, all the recipes in Fred's book came from Fred. So when you're thinking about that, talk a little bit about, if you would, like some of the, we're adding a little spice that brightens it up.
Yep.
And that gives it do you think it kind of like cleans it up and makes it refreshing? Or what do you think about some of those things? I know like vinegar, salt, those things are made to kind of be an accent and push the flavor forward. And since we don't have salt in beer, of course, well, most beers, but then something like this, how does that complement something that has some real zing to something like your Pale Uzo?
Well, I think we're dealing with the brightness a little bit in the, you know, and the spice and the citrus that we've already put in there. And the beer is really acting as a unifier. And so we've countered a little bit of that, what we lose in the stock in the other parts of the recipe. And the beer is integrating and blending and making some really nice texture as well as flavor.
Sure. So when we're talking about raw food, too, I love that idea. One thing that Fred and I were talking about before we gave the session was thinking about cooking differently. Cooking doesn't have to involve heat. It doesn't have to involve a chemical change. It can simply be combined ingredients. I'm guessing you also make salad dressings with beer.
I make a lot of salad dressings. I love, there's several vinaigrettes in the book, although I also joke that I felt silly writing a recipe for vinaigrette because I don't use them anymore. When you kind of learn the basics of what's vinaigrette, it's acid with fat and some seasoning. So the fat's going to help stick to things and bring a little sweetness. The acid's going to keep it from being too sweet and lend brightness and some spice. And then salt and pepper, of course, is universal and excellent seasoning and food brighteners. And so you can then play with that and bring different things for that roll, and you can just change your ratios. So bringing in beer for maybe half of the vinegar, then you might up your acid a little bit in another way, like some lemon juice or some sharp mustard. If you start heading too far that way, you could always bring in some honey or some other things. So when you learn the basics, that raw treatment is a great way, and I especially like it for hoppy beers. I'm very, you can cook with hoppy beers, but it takes some countering. And so for the people who aren't ready for that, or just, when I like to use hoppy beers is because they're herbal and they're aromatic. Hops remind me of herbs all the time. You get that grassy green character, and it's aromatic and bright.
Right.
Reminds me of basil, it reminds me of walking
sure.
past the herb garden. So when you use it in its raw state, that's when you're capturing that. That's when, you know, I love it in salads in spring because you're getting
right.
this great aromatics.
Yes, absolutely. And why not eat al fresco if you're going to do that, right?
Yeah.
Then you get the heightened sensory awareness of being outside. I'm going to let you do the honors of putting the beer in here.
All right, how much are we
beer.
Putting in?
Oh, we need half a cup.
All right.
Was that
I think it's about
a
half
Freudian
a cup.
Slip?
What do you think? All right, so normally you would do this in a blender, and it's a simple combination of ingredients. You've got peanut butter, which is nice and sweet and rich and great texture. I think we should add a little more peanut butter. I probably added too much beer. And this is the idea of a sauce like this. You're going for preference and texture. So then you can taste it. We've got fish sauce in here. We've got soy sauce. We've got lemon juice. Or is that lime juice? Lime juice. I should know, but, you know, it's been a long week.
So when you think about how you were developing these recipes, Fred, too, clearly you can adapt these all over the map, right?
Absolutely.
And how many?
The world is about improvisation.
That's right.
I'm making peanut sauce with egg beaters.
Yes. Not to be confused. So when you decide to play with this sauce, so if you're going to do some variations on this sauce, what else could you either add or substitute?
Well, I said I was for improvisation. I wasn't for people changing my recipes. No, just kidding.
They need to get the book, and then they can write notes.
No, I think you could push this different ways. It's really kind of a balance between sweet and acid and spice. So if you wanted a little more spice, I would normally, I don't know if we did this, but I would fold cilantro in as well. And you could change that up with different herbs if you wanted.
Sure. Have you done with crunchy peanut butter at all?
I have not. But,
so you could add another texture component.
Absolutely. And you could change beers out or not use beer.
Right.
This is a great pairing, beer or not. But I think we've made them wait long enough. Have you guys already eaten your chicken salad or have you waited patiently?
I like that.
Because you should do that. Mm. Oh, you guys have Ichabod out there?
Mackenzie.
Yes, you've received Ichabod. Thank you, Taylor.
Right. Awesome.
So this is one of those things where sometimes I think a good memory is better than a rule. Because I don't know why I chose this. The first time I ever tried this beer, our brewmaster handed me the beer, and I drank it, and I thought, I would love this with peanut sauce. And it wasn't a cerebral, conceptualized, let me tell you why. It was, I think this would be good.
Sure.
And then I tried it a couple weeks later, and it was great.
Right.
And I've used it ever since. And then this recipe, however, has developed over time. So we've gone from a simple chicken satay with peanut sauce to grilled chicken in this Thai marinade over collard greens. And then today, Nick at Serendipity Catering, who's provided all this great food, let's hear it for Nick. The adaptation we did for today was to look at it as a salad, as a cold chicken salad. So each component was cooked separately, similarly to how it would have been in the normal dish. But then composed as a cold salad. So all the flavors are there. The greens have sesame oil. They have some soy sauce. They have garlic. They have some sriracha. So there's a little spice. There's a little bite. And it's kind of blending cultures together. So there's Thai flavors in here.
Yes.
But, you know, I don't know that we could pull it off in Thailand or anything. But
okay,
and then the chicken is in this Thai marinade. And then it's drizzled with this peanut sauce on top.
So this peanut sauce would be really versatile. You could warm it up a little bit if you wanted.
Yes.
It would probably intensify the flavor a little bit. And then you could probably chill it way down, which would make it more thick, almost like a frosting, which could be really creative.
I tend to store it in a squirt bottle in the fridge.
Right.
And then that will give you a nice firm drizzle.
Sure, absolutely.
And then if you're doing it on hot food, that will warm it up.
Oh, and I
so
bet that looks
on the food,
beautiful.
It will kind of start to coat and loosen.
Sure.
And spread.
Sure.
And coat.
Sure. So that would be another tip for cooking at home. Find some simple tools that are extremely versatile, like squeeze bottles. You can put so many different things in there, and you can, it looks like you worked really hard, and you put some thought into it, clearly, but it's something really, really simple. So that's another tip to it. Yeah,
so
give that a whirl.
I want to show you guys this peanut sauce. So here it is. I don't know if you can see it on the camera, but this is the consistency we have, and that will thicken up in the fridge. And so depending on how you like it and what you're doing with it, if you're tossing it in noodles, you're not going to be looking for that firm drizzle, so you could go in a different way. But this would be great on a pasta dish, spread as a sauce rather than as a drizzle.
So I'm going to ask you a question then about pasta, Fred. So we make some pasta. It's warm. You drain it. Do you like to toss it with a little bit of oil or anything like that? I mean, that would absorb this, which could be great because you kind of infuse the pasta that way. Or would you just toss it warm? Would you let the pasta cool down? What would you do?
I think in this case, I wouldn't toss it in oil first unless I was cooking it with other things in a pan and I was building the pasta into a saute, say with shrimp or chicken or whatever, and then I was going to add the sauce in. But I think oil straight by itself and this really may cause separation and they may not blend. I mean, we've kind of combined, we've already blended that fat in here.
Excellent. I love it.
But if you found that it was sticking and not spreading well, then add a little oil and help whisk it in together.
So would a little peanut oil then be a wise choice since you're already using peanut butter? Yes. Yes, he says as he tastes his own food. Yes, I love it. It's wonderful. Good stuff, Maynard? Yeah. So tell us then, okay, so we paired this with the Ichabod, right? And tell us when you're done, of course. Take your time, Fred. You are the beer evangelist. Tell us why you paired the Ichabod, or what is it about the Ichabod?
Well, I think that the sweetness is nice against the heat. I think there's a malt character that's with the pumpkin that's a really good mouthfeel and a nice roundness. And I really like the way the pumpkin ales with cinnamon and nutmeg are so often pushed towards dessert and pushed towards fruit and pushed towards more pumpkin and pushed towards cinnamon. And I just think this is a really nice savory combination because the spices belong here, but they are immediately in a savory context. So I like that they both change each other. I think that the pumpkin beer and those spices are immediate synergy with the sauce, and the sauce is tempered. And then as far as the beer goes, it becomes this delicious savory beer.
For sure. And I see there's some sesame seeds
yes.
in here as well. So is that complementing the... When you add sesame seeds, because they can have a really distinct taste, what do you like to... What's going on in your head, Fred?
Well, for me, I was partly... You know, those are added maybe more for the greens themselves because they're sesame oil, and I wanted to punctuate that.
Oh, okay.
And I think what it does for the beer is it is part of that shift, is that, you know, that's something I would definitely have in a savory setting, and it's going to pull out some of the earthy characteristics of the beer.
Sure.
And we're riffing here on sweetness and not. I don't know of a better way to say that.
Sure.
There are a lot of things that could be sweet here.
Sure.
But when I eat and drink this, I don't think of it as a sweet dish.
Sure.
But
right.
We have peanut butter. We have a nice, you know, malty beer.
Right.
With
you got the
pumpkin
caramelized onions,
and malted, yeah.
things like that. Yeah.
And yet, I think the sesame and the soy and the spice and the everything is brightening and contrasting sweetness.
Sure. So is this one of those sauces, Fred, that will get better if it ages a little while, or it just simply tastes different, or what do you think about it?
I will use it fresh, and I'll use it for a couple of weeks in the fridge. I don't know. I think the heat may develop over time. I wouldn't age it intentionally, but it'll keep for a little while. And I would taste it every time you pull it out because the heat may develop.
So you talked about age. Do you like to age your beers?
I like to age some beers. Dragon's Milk, which is our next beer, is something I love with a little age on it. And, you know, aging with intention is great. You need beers that have enough oomph to make it. And I always encourage people to realize that you're looking for something more than for the beer to survive. You're looking to have flavors that will develop. And so nice, rich, warm beers that have lots of depth.
Sure.
Those flavors will marry and smoothen over time.
So would Ichabod be nice, a little warmer than fridge temp then too?
Either way, I think Ichabod, you know, will do well as it warms, but is also appropriate fresh, cold.
It's delicious.
And now.
Absolutely, yeah. And what else have you used Ichabod? Did you use Ichabod in some other things in the book?
No, this is the only dish for Ichabod in the book. But I think, like I mentioned, it goes really well with fruit, goes really well with apples,
okay.
Goes really well with all the things you would take those spices to naturally.
Okay.
And it goes really well with all the things you would take pumpkin or squash to.
Sure.
So I think you could do a nice spiced soup.
Sure.
Squash soup would be great with it. And play on the fact that we know these things go together and just move them around
sure.
in different ways.
I think of like a peach cobbler or
Absolutely.
Like a deep stone fruit, something or other.
Absolutely.
That would be really good.
Especially if you then take some of those spices and integrate them into the cobbler.
Sure,
so
absolutely.
Now instead of just your regular peach cobbler, bring some nutmeg and cinnamon in.
Sure.
And it's going to waken that up in the beer.
Right, absolutely.
And bring it in a fresh way.
Is Ichabod one of your seasonals?
Yes. So it's available essentially now from middle August to now.
To know.
Okay. Yep.
Is it being poured on the floor?
No, it is not. So you heard it here. You get Ichabod.
Right.
Nobody else does.
Extra special. I love it. Indeed.
And, you know, you bring up seasonal eating and or seasonal beer, and I just want to say that I really encourage you to get in touch with eating and drinking seasonally. Whether you're a full-blown foodie and you're going to the farmer's market and you're growing stuff in your garden or not, our palate is really accustomed to seasonal flavors. There's things we like at certain times of the year because we're used to them
Right.
growing at that time.
It's almost a physiological reaction.
Yeah, it's a very natural thing.
Right.
And that's how I've really, the book had brought me there even more than before, which is telling the story through, let's decide what we're drinking based on what we should be eating.
Do you do it both ways? Do you do, what should I eat based on what I'm drinking, and what should I drink based on
yeah,
what I'm eating?
Yeah, but I'm saying they're both born from the season.
Oh, right, right,
which
right.
is more,
okay.
Brewers are making beer. We make beer from ingredients that are in store.
Right.
In almost all cases.
Right.
Harvest ales are a slight exception, but even then we're taking grain that was stored and malted.
Sure.
And so the brewer's response to seasonality is about flavor. We're matching flavors to what our palate expects that time of year. We're not always pulling it out of the ground.
Right.
So pumpkin ale, we're using pumpkins that were stored from last year because we want to taste it before it's possible to make it.
Right.
But food is not always the case. Food, we have more opportunities to eat fresh
sure.
from the earth right now.
Okay.
And our palate expects that. And then the beer that you either make or choose to serve is really in a response to accentuate that beauty.
Very good. Excellent. You're a cross drinker, aren't you, Fred?
What's that?
You're a cross drinker, aren't you?
I'm a cross drinker, yes.
Yes. You like spirits
I'm
and
a
wine
cross-drinker.
And
wow,
beer.
Wow, I just about
Absolutely.
Tripped over something.
Very
there.
Good. Yeah, that's a really nice sauce. I can see where that would be very versatile. And you call it, you simply call it, what did you name it in the book?
I think I call it peanut sauce.
Wait a minute, what's that?
Peanut sauce.
Very nice. It's beautiful. It would make, you know, you could even dip some dessert-like things in here. Something that
yeah.
has a, I don't know, like a big fat unsalted pretzel or some warm bread, maybe? Or like a, yeah, okay, I'm going to get carried away, so I'll just stop. Or maybe I should get carried away. This is good stuff. And you say
I like how you engage with the sauce.
Absolutely.
You're very connected
I'm
right now.
I'm being one with the sauce, yes.
We're going to lose Ginger here in a minute.
I'm just going to go in the corner over here. So,
what do you guys think about peanut sauce and pumpkin ale? Do we have any winners?
All right. Excellent. Very good.
Shall we go on?
Yes.
Shall we let them go to dessert?
Let's move on. Let's have some dessert, yes.
So beer and dessert is something that I'm passionate about, partly because there's always a lot of doubters. There's people that when you mention... Oh, we should have beer with dessert. They look at you like you've come in from the insane asylum. Like
right,
that.
You're crazy.
Yes.
What?
And
no.
The irony to me is that when you look at the available flavors in beer, and you can start listing them just off the top of your head, when you think about roastiness and coffee and chocolate and sweetness and caramel, nuttiness, molasses,
bready,
toffee,
biscuit,
bready,
cracker,
biscuity,
right.
fruit.
Yes.
And you have tons of fruits. You have apricot, pear, apple.
Right.
These are flavors generated by beer. We don't even need those ingredients.
Right.
And to me, we just listed a pastry chef's pantry. those are flavors that are used in dessert universally.
Yes.
We're baking things. We're caramelizing things. We're playing with fruit. We're
right.
crossing between sweet and
right.
contrasting sweet. And beer has that's in beer's wheelhouse.
Yes.
So I always like to remind people and prove to people that beer works at dessert.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. And I love to surprise people with beer and dessert because it is usually unexpected. And so when it's unexpected, your palate is surprised. And I think you're more open-minded because one of the classics I love to serve is a milk stout, something as simple as a great chocolate brownie, maybe with some fresh raspberries or strawberries or something like that. It's absolutely delicious, and it's very unexpected for most people. Well, they're going to go and do that, though, because they love a brownie. So what the heck, they're gonna go ahead and try the stout with it also.
You need to finish your beer, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yes, sir. What are we having now?
All right, so this is Dragon's Milk, and this is a bourbon barrel stout.
Oh.
So it's a nice, roasty 10% stout that we age in bourbon barrels. And more important than how it's made or anything like that, what it demonstrates are nice, roasty characteristics. There's a dark roast of malt, which brings chocolate and coffee. We get vanilla and coconut from the barrel aging. And I think it's a lovely beer. And what we have to eat with it is a chocolate truffle. One of the things I love about this beer and bourbon barrel beers in general is that they can cross between sweet and savory as well.
Definitely.
Because there's an earthiness, there's an umami characteristic there that does really well with things like mushrooms and
right.
beef
right.
and balsamic.
Right.
And then of course the chocolate and vanilla is a no-brainer.
Right.
So here we have a truffle from my friend Gail Ambrosius in Madison, Wisconsin. And this is a shiitake truffle. So she has steeped shiitake mushrooms in the cream and then made a dark chocolate truffle.
Wow.
So in and of itself, when she first told me she made this, we were working on an event and I didn't let her finish the sentence. I just said, it's Dragon's Milk. I'm not accepting any other answer.
That's right.
And it's been a favorite of mine ever since because I feel like this bridges this dance between sweetness and earthiness.
Can we try it already?
Yes, please, okay. Try it.
So it's a soft chocolate, too. Do you think the texture... Well, obviously, texture has a huge influence on what we eat. So I jump into that, and I was expecting it to be hard just for some reason. But then it's this beautiful creaminess. I put that beer in my mouth, the slight acidity and that beautiful sweetness of that bourbon. Wow, I'm going to need a chair to sit down.
And what I like, I mean, this is happening in general with the craft drinker, is that our palates are getting more acclimated to things, and this is no longer as challenging of a beer to people as it used to be. But on the same token, what pairing does is sometimes make things more agile or more friendly or more easygoing. It doesn't erase flavors, but it makes them accessible. And so Dragon's Milk, which can read a little bit big, it's a 10% stout. I think once you start going back and forth between the chocolate and the beer, it starts drinking. It's really light on its feet. It's really easygoing. It just seems right at home. And I think that's one of the beauties of pairing, is that you'll see people who don't like certain styles of beer, but paired well, they can have it in that setting, and it starts to open doors. Because, it had a context. Rather than just saying, try this. You know, you have to like sour beers.
Right.
Well, you know, finding a really good pairing might be a great way for somebody who doesn't understand sour beers
right.
for their palate to go, I get it. You know,
light bulb goes off.
Acid characters. I have it in other places. I just didn't ever think of it in my beer.
Right, right.
And you know, this is one of those examples.
So this chocolate is extremely subtle. So if you get somebody who's not a mushroom liker, because I know my sister, for example, she doesn't like mushrooms. She doesn't touch them if she knows they're in there. If I wouldn't have told her that there were mushrooms in there, that's so smooth and mild and delicious that, boy, nobody's the wiser, and it's incredible. And then maybe you get some different, maybe she experiences it in a whole different way.
Yeah.
I love that. That's delicious. How do you like that? Is that a good pairing? Thumbs up? Very nice. Has anybody done a... He hates mushrooms, but he loves... Well, he can't say that anymore, can he? He likes mushrooms in his chocolate.
He hates mushrooms when they're not wrapped in a chocolate truffle.
Right. Yeah. I don't think too many of us would
argue
with
that.
That's
a place to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody starts somewhere.
Very good. I love this. This is really delicious, Fred. What else did you, with the dragon's blood, what else is in your book about the dragon's blood? Did you use it in some other recipes? Or?
I did.
Tell us.
There's a famous recipe in there,
famous?
Which is the dragon's milk donut. And so, one, I want to remind people that you don't always have to cook with beer to pair well, and all dishes don't have to be complicated.
No, keep it simple.
But sometimes...
This is complicated.
Sometimes it's worth it to just kind of go over the top.
Is it complicated or just involved?
Involved.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
So the Dragon's Milk Donut is a... I made it as part of a nose-to-tail dinner where we were using all parts of the pig in a smokehouse, and I was invited to guest chef and create the whole menu. So I was really trying to figure out how to bring... pig into dessert. thank you. So I was really working on how am I going to bring pork into dessert in an interesting way
with compelling
flavors and then pair it with beer.
Okay. So you
and
said
this is
yourself,
what I came up
self?
With, which is a fried beignet. So it's a nice batter that's fried.
Okay.
Nice, light and airy. And then I make a beer and whiskey custard. Kind of like an adapted creme anglaise.
Wow.
That has bourbon and dragon's milk in it.
Okay, so this is...
And I inject that into the donut.
And this isn't hard. It's simply a few more steps. And
it's not that hard.
Basic ingredients.
You're beating sugar into egg yolks and then building a custard off of that.
Sure. Custard is not hard.
Right.
It's delicious.
But it does include the ingredient doubt, that you want to get it to where it's the right ribbon consistency. And it always gets there right after you're about to give up. So when you doubt it, embrace that. It's part of the recipe.
You should probably be drinking a beer while you're making this.
Because
then the doubt goes away.
So that's basically a custard filling that has this nice roasty character. And that's injected into the donut. And then we make a caramel out of this beer. So I talked to you about using beer over heat. And you have to be careful. So we're going to reduce this beer way down until it's a sticky, gooey caramel.
Wonderful.
And that could become bitter. So we're going to counter that two ways.
Right.
We're going to add sugar, for one, to help it along and to provide some sweetness and contrast. And we're going to add a generous amount of butter. And so butter is a lipid. So when you taste the caramel, that butter is going to actually coat your palate and dull your perception of bitterness.
And the bitterness, of course, comes when you cook down the hops. It really becomes tannic and so forth. I know that I'm pretty sure you agree. If you like to cook, IPAs in particular, like Fred was saying, really bitter beers are tougher. They're not impossible, but this is not the one you want to cook down.
Butter.
Butter's an answer for a lot of that. Butter, bacon, beer.
Right. And it's not always a simple solve. But in this case, this is not that hard to make. You put some beer and some sugar and some butter on the stove and you watch it go down. And you taste it occasionally, and when you think you're about to be dizzy, it's so good, you stop. And then you put it in a squirt bottle, and it can come to room temperature or be stored cold, and it'll squirt out, and you drizzle over the donuts with this nice, sticky, gooey beer caramel.
Yum.
And then you cover that. You guys, have you heard anything about pigs yet? Have we used pork yet?
No.
We haven't.
No.
So we put bacon in the oven.
Oh, there's the bacon.
And about halfway through, we cover it with brown sugar and almonds.
The bacon.
Yes. And so the brown sugar and the almonds.
We're caramelizing the bacon.
We're candying the bacon.
What's the difference between caramelizing and candying?
It's a good question. I mean, caramelizing even originally is traditionally just sugar, but candying is when you're going to coat it with sugar and crisp it up, I think.
Candy coating. Okay. Very good.
I think.
Okay.
So anyways, we candy the bacon. And make it into this kind of praline and then chop it all up. And then we dust the donut that's covered in caramel and filled with custard. And you have the dragon's milk donut. It doesn't seem fair to talk to you about it and not have them.
It's kind of torturous, Fred.
I do apologize. However, the book is on sale in the GABF bookstore. And immediately following this, I'll be happy to meet you there and sign
a copy. Very good.
And then you can make dragon's milk donuts.
All right, yes, indeed. This is excellent, Fred. How long have you been cooking? Since college, you said? So at least 15 years?
Yeah, at least 15 years.
And you're just going to keep going strong.
Yeah, 15 or 25, I don't know.
So you go all over doing these tastings. What are some of the farther trips you've taken? You live in Michigan. Where are some of the far reaches of the earth that you've gone? Since this is the Beer Evangelist Guide to the Galaxy.
It is a galaxy.
Yes.
Well, over a family vacation in Denmark this summer, we did some pairings. In fact, I made a chocolate mousse for our 30-person group of family, and we used rum and beer in the mousse. And I had two. This is also kind of a fun example. I was trying to take lessons out of my own playbook. And I had two 22-ounce bottles of Dragon's Milk, and I was doing dinner for 30 people. There's only so much you can pack in your suitcase.
I was going to say.
And I didn't know what I was going to do with the beer. And then as we were prepping for dinner, I thought, 44 ounces, 30 people. I can use a cordial glass and pour about an ounce and a half of Dragon's Milk for everybody. Okay. Serve it right next to their chilled chocolate mousse. And
perfect.
And boom, we had a pairing in Denmark.
Nice.
Out of a suitcase.
I'm guessing this dragon's blood would make a really good malt. Like high-quality ice cream. Put a little
absolutely.
Of that in there. Whip that up, a little malt powder. That
absolutely.
Could be delicious. Yes, indeed. Very good.
So what about you, Ginger? Tell me about your most radical beer and food experience.
Oh, wow.
Or your most comfort-driven beer and food experience, since we're talking about beer and food at home.
I'm a huge cook from the hip. I open the cabinets and the fridge, and I see what I've got, and I just go. So we got a gift one time from a home brewer. We got 12 bottles of 22 ounces of all kinds of different beers, and they were all pretty high gravity, pretty high alcohol. And so we opened one, and it was a raspberry wheat, and it was very, very sweet. Fruit beers, of course, as we know, can range very sweet. They can be drier. They can be all in the range. This was really sweet, so I couldn't drink very much of it. So I ended up putting that in the crock pot over some beef ribs, set it and forget it, like Ron Papil likes to say. And I think I came home after 3 or 4 hours, and I just could not believe the aroma. I knew it was going to caramelize, but that was an epiphany for me because I realized that was a great way to use it. I hadn't cooked so much in my crock pot with beer before. I mean, that's a really simple way. I mean, all bets are off. I love to, I do like to do the ice cube thing because then I just think, when I cook, I'll think, what do I have in beer that I need to use? It'll keep for some time. Put it in a quart jar or whatever. But most radical, I don't know. You'd have to ask my husband.
All right. Well, in summary, I think, if there were a few things I would hope you'd leave with today, it's that explore.
Yes.
Really trust your palate and just try to connect with the flavors and so that you can conjure them up later and decide what you'd like with them. And really, all of this is geared to make your experiences and your friends and family that you eat and drink with more enjoyable. So
absolutely.
If that's your intention, it will always get easier.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Fred. You have a great book. If you haven't seen it already, I highly recommend it. Thanks so much to the Beer Evangelist. You're going to go sign books next, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I am.
Excellent.
Does
Wonderful.
Anybody have any questions? We can pass the mic out real quick.
When are you going to distribute Dragon's Milk in California, Fred?
That is a very good question. Maybe sooner than you think. We're starting to work on it. Stay tuned for Dragon's Milk in California or other states.
It's your hat.
It's the hat.
Okay, my husband made a beer with juniper berries and mulling spices. What would you make a food to match with that?
It was juniper and what else?
Mulling spices, juniper berries, and mulling spices.
Okay. So what would I pair with a beer with juniper and mulling spices? I would start to think about where else do I like juniper, and then imagine that. I don't use a whole lot of juniper, but I would think that I think pairing that with some like earthy salads with maybe crisp fruit could be really cool. Some place that's going to let those spices come forward and not get run over. It really also depends on the type of beer. So is it a big beer? Is it a little beer? Is it sweet? Is it dry? All those are going to play. I also think you could make some pretty cool savory desserts that might play with that spicing a little bit and not think sweet, but go a little different there. Maybe some poached pears could be cool.
When in doubt, pair your beer with cheese. Have a beer and cheese potluck. Because, I mean, you've done, yeah, the Cypress Grove Chev, that truffle tremor, it's a really unusual cheese. Frankly, the first time I tried it, I wasn't quite sure. Because it's so, yeah, it is delicious, but it's so distinct. And cheese, like beer, is alive. So there's a reason that they kind of go hand in hand, and they're kind of fun to mix and match with. So I think of I live in Southern Oregon, and their Rogue Creamery is down there, and they make a raspberry, a rosemary Tuvel. And it's a semi-dry, beautiful, very herbaceous. And I would try it with that because the rosemary is really subtle. If the juniper is mild in that beer, it could be a really interesting juxtaposition. And what the heck? It's experimenting. You know, you already know, you got nothing to lose in trying and everything to gain.
Well, and the other thing, I think this goes for brewing and cooking, and so it makes sense that it goes into pairing, is that when you miss, you're eating and drinking, so it's usually not that bad. And when you miss, you have information to dial it in next time. So even sometimes it's really great, everybody loves it, but you're the one who imagined it. And so if it didn't live up to your imagination, you can still go, yeah, it was good, but I'm gonna tweak this here and there. And so you're always listening to your palate and think and trying to get to places that will make your palate happier. And so whether the miss is dramatic and a disaster, or it's just you think you can do better, all that's the same process. So I really try to not sweat even when I think it might be headed towards disaster, it usually isn't. Because your own intuition, your own palate will guide it to not be as disastrous as you think.
How'd you guys like the pairings? Please give them a round of applause if you liked them. I'm sure you did. They were amazing. Once again, give it up for the beer evangelist, Fred Boltman, New Holland, Ginger Johnson, Women Enjoying Beer. Thank you, guys. Have a good rest of the night.
Thanks, everybody, for coming. Go out and explore. And remember to stop and taste.